This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. I think I'm going to take a slightly different perspective for this aspect of my presentation, but I really want to build upon the relevance of the earlier talks. The title here sort of says progression into STEM programmes. I'm actually going to talk about progression through STEM, because I think what we've spoken a lot about this morning is actually the process of encouraging students to apply and enter university. And I think there's really an important piece of work that we have to look at, which is what happens to students once they start university study. In particular, this first year is highlighted as being really kind of quite critical to their future success on their chosen programmes of study. And I'm going to kind of talk about primarily some of the work that I've been involved in, but some of the activities that has gone on across the STEM sector. And I think I learnt a great phrase working in mathematics for the last sort of 6 years or so, which is I conjecture. And I think I am going to give you a very personal opinion, but pulling together some of the evidence of what we've seen across the sector. So really, the intention is I'm not necessarily going to give you the solutions that some of the HE sector have implemented. I'm quite happy to share those on a personal level. But really, I want to kind of flag this up as an area that really there could be some considerable work, some real partnership building between schools and universities that can make a real difference in this area. And I think, talking about progression, I think we have to look at the whole process. Again, sort of the focus so far has been very much the progression into higher education. But actually, we have to look at the progression beyond higher education and actually looking at this through process. And really, that actually preparation for the world of the workplace or further study, postgraduate study, for example, doesn't necessarily start when students commence at university or end when students leave university. That actually that process begins throughout their entire educational experience. And really, I'm going to pick upon sort of two key points. That one is the aspect of recruitment into HE. Okay, and in particular, I'm going to talk about participation within STEM, which I think the evidence points to the fact is working well in terms of a recruitment sense. Whether it's working so well in an overall widening participation sense, I think there's still much more work that we need to do. But in particular, I'm going to talk about this interface or the transition, where I really do think that there's a lot more work needed in a coordinated, coherent manner. And if we look at the demand for STEM, that looking across sort of the last 10 years or so, the data really, again, pulled from Hefty's CIVS reports, indicates that against the backdrop of higher education student numbers totaling just over a million, so about an 18% increase over that period, then actually there's been growth within the STEM disciplines. Maths has increased by 9%, physics, chemistry, 5%. There's been a decline, as you'll see from the figures, in engineering and technology. So there's been growth across the sector and growth within the STEM disciplines that were kind of flagged up as a real concern by various reports that you would have seen. But the signs are becoming more and more positive. In particular, that if we look at this chart, which hopefully is readable from where you are, that tries to compare the data over the last sort of 3 years that it's typically available. And so looks at not only just undergraduate full-time equivalent student numbers, but also looks at UCAS acceptances, but also looks at A-level entries as well. And I think that this really is an example where, partnerships between schools, universities, other organisations and initiatives are working quite well. Because I think, we all recognise to attract more students into STEM, we need to look at the A-level entries. We obviously need to encourage them to apply, so we look at the UCAS acceptances, and that will then translate to student numbers on programmes. And you can see that over the last 3 years that student numbers across all subjects, so CIVS being strategically important and vulnerable subjects, which are subjects that were designated so by the Higher Education Funding Council in about 2004-2005 at the request of then Charles Clark, who asked them to look into this, that overall, the numbers within HE remain relatively flat over the last 3 years. But if you chart the sort of the participation within chemistry, within physics, and within mathematics as well, you'll see that there has been growth at a time when the rest of the sector appears to be slightly static. Now, we need to take into account some of the earlier discussions, because this shows increasing demand or increasing participation. We're recruiting more students, or more students are participating in our disciplines, but are we actually kind of widening the groups of learner that participate in our programmes of study? And I think the evidence from this morning showed that really we have a lot more to do there. In particular, why is this important for the STEM disciplines? Well, we spoke about the issue of universities, or selecting universities, I think was the phrase that was used earlier today. That actually, if you look at where some of the provision is based, so let's just take physics, for example, there are around 23 institutions who've returned scores from the NSS in physics a couple of years ago. Now, they would primarily be from the Russell Group or from the 1994 group. Look at chemistry, there were around 34 departments as well. So I think that we have to look at the overall cohorts within STEM to see what work we need to do to widen participation. Indeed, there are some issues there that we need to explore. But the demand for STEM really has increased over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And I think the reasons for that are the work of a huge number of organisations and initiatives. Graham will talk about Aim Higher, but we have the work of the National STEM Centre, the Science Learning Centres, organisations such as STEMnet, and indeed a range of HEFCE-funded projects as well. That there were 4 very specific disciplinary interventions commissioned in 2005-2006, one of which I was part of at the University of Birmingham. So there's been a lot of work going into encouraging students to enter university within STEM. And I think we're also starting to see changing student perceptions. Now, this quote I took straight from a forum on the internet. Now, you know, again, being a scientist, I really should validate my sources, but I think this really is quite telling. Again, there's probably a degree of bias in here, but actually that students are willing to articulate some of these opinions. Again, this is not to pass any judgment, but it indicates that students are actually thinking at a different level about maybe some of their subject choices. That actually they're talking here about STEM in terms of a particular skill set that employers are looking for. And again, I think that that leads on to really a quote that I really do like, which is sometimes that we think about science or STEM as really a collection of facts. But actually what we're talking about is that science, the STEM disciplines, really are a way of thinking more than just a collection of things that we need to know. And I think, again, that indicates why employers do particularly value STEM qualifications. And again, if you've not seen any of the material from Carl Sagan, who was an American astronomer and in particular taught a very good critical thinking course at Cornell, actually do have a look at some of his material, because it really is, there's some really interesting things to read there about STEM and the popularisation of STEM. But I also think as well that employers are, or the voice of employees is actually having some impact upon student decisions. This was taken from the CBI Education and Skills Survey last year, where actually employers are articulating that they want STEM skills. That phrase is now being used quite widely within Parliament, within society, that STEM is becoming a well-known phrase. And actually 9 out of 10 firms want STEM-skilled people, and that actually, given a choice, 4 out of 10 employers prefer STEM degrees over any subjects. And again, the CBI surveys are, you know, several hundred, 600, 700 employers are commenting. So again, I think these are filtering their way down into student career choices. I think moving it on to where we need to consider is actually what happens with the progression within FE. And so, if you will, retention is another phrase that's often used for this. And in particular, looking at a separate HEFCE report that looked at continuation or participation by certain or by ethnic groups of learner within higher education, and looking at what in particular the retention rate there was, so i.e. how many sort of transfer programmes or in particular left HE, you'll see that the average for higher education, again this is all disciplines, not particularly STEM, and this may be something that I think we may wish to look into in more detail as part of some work that we'll commission in the future. But around sort of 8% of the cohort that enter higher education actually leave HE at the end of the first year, or before the end of the first year. And so I think that we talk a lot about student numbers coming in. In particular, what can we do to ensure that these students are retained? And if you want to read sort of an alternative account of retention. There was quite a nice article by Laurie Taylor in the Times Higher a couple of years ago. And again, if anyone wants to see that, it's quite humorous, so do let me know. But again, it's a serious area for work that we have to look at across the sector. And so I think this moves me on to really the kind of the core part of the talk, which is actually this school to university interface. And again, I think it's important that we have to consider how school, FE, HE, college partnerships, also how we can involve employers in this process as well, can actually add value to the work that's going on. Because clearly we are recruiting students within STEM, again, taking into account any issues there may be with widening the cohort. But within the STEM disciplines, there's a whole series of well-documented issues. And I've kind of collected these together and I've got more evidence for them later on. But I talk to my colleagues across the sector, not just within my own institution, who raise kind of real issues with the expected prior knowledge of incoming undergraduates. And I think this is a key thing that's going to underpin the rest of this talk, is this issue of expectations. Is it student expectations of what they can expect from higher education, or is it staff expectations of what they can expect from their incoming students? But clearly, I think in part there may be some mismatches there. Big issue from one of my, I guess, my adopted discipline of mathematics is this issue of mathematical preparedness and fluency. And not just within mathematics, but within engineering, within physical sciences, we're also seeing issues across chemistry, other STEM-related disciplines as well, in particular nursing, I think, was mentioned in one of the seminars today. And again, there are real issues there with mathematical skills. In particular, in physics, within chemistry, laboratory and practical skills, often students are not quite entering higher education with the skills that staff typically expect. Problem solving is a big one that appears across many reports at the moment. And I think, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what do we mean by problem solving skills? Problem solving isn't necessarily a skill in itself. It's a collection of other skills that you need to develop. Things like analysis, interpretation, being able to model, but all part of a broad group that we actually need to think, well, how can we begin to develop these? And academic staff have also raised issues with regard to attitudes of students with regard to the study when they enter higher education. Now, that may not necessarily be student attitudes per se, but actually a very different approach to learning that the students experience when they enter higher education. And just to say that an important part of this talk is actually that we need to look at how we can work across institutions and across organisations, but let's not forget the disciplinary dimension that comes to this, that certainly the academic communities, for example, professional bodies or disciplines within or our departments within higher education, are doing a lot of work with schools around the transition or around recruitment as well, and certainly we've been heavily involved in mathematics. And I want to kind of pull together some points that hopefully will inform some of the discussions later today. So really, you know, I'm just trying to provoke debate here, but a fairly reasonably substantial project in 2005 that was led from Glasgow looked at this school-to-university transition within STEM, and it asked the HE staff, well, what do you want from students? If you had a wish list, what could you expect these students to do? And they wanted students with a curiosity and an interest in the subject, students who know how to study independently and who are prepared to work. So remember, this is as they begin university. Students with the skills and knowledge required to succeed in their chosen course. Now, the last one is a bit more abstract, but actually students who know how to study independently really is quite a skill to expect of students as they begin university study. And if you try to sort of unpick this into, I guess, three areas, the attitudes that HE staff expected were they wanted students to be motivated, persistence, particularly with regard to sort of tackling problems and not seeking help immediately, but actually beginning to work on these on their own, showing initiative or being keen, and again, this ability to study independently. But in particular, highlighting these general skills. So numeracy was a big one. Again, literally, that could be sort of elements of basic mathematics, ratio, proportion, were things that were cited. That's very different from mathematical ability, where it was fluency with algebraic processes, but also things like logarithms, powers, indices were big issues across STEM. Literacy, it was cited that students couldn't write reports or extended pieces of work, so things like laboratory reports. Problem-solving skills, again, crops up here, which is basically stuff highlighted is this lack of ability to apply knowledge to unfamiliar concepts. Practical skills I've mentioned before, IT skills, which actually were, you know, I think students come into higher education better prepared in an IT sense than certainly I was, but they still raise issues with around some of the higher level computing skills in terms of computing programs prior to university. But also, again, this statement that they require this necessary prerequisite knowledge. And again, I think there's a huge mismatch here between what academic staff expect students to know and actually the knowledge that students have coming in to university. And that's certainly not to say that it's any fault of the incoming students, that really they perform with the qualifications that they have in front of them. But clearly, there is this some real mismatch in expectations that we need to look at how we can address. And again, that's an area where we can work really quite successfully together. If you look at the transitional issues from the student perspective, then actually they break down very, very differently. Certainly there are academic issues there. The teaching and learning style within higher education is very different to school. Larger lecture sizes, problem-solving classes, for example, in mathematics, that students are actually, you know, more reliant upon engaging themselves rather than sort of being marshalled through the educational system. Things like problem-based learning are really substantial elements within higher education programmes. Assessment is very, very different. Okay, very different processes that actually less modularisation and actually this being able to apply things across different modules. Volume and pace of work was flagged up as a real issue, and I think, again, that was mentioned in one of the seminars, that actually multiple pieces of work across a range of different university modules that may be studied at the same time. But there are also other factors that we need to take into account and see how we can support students. So it isn't just around the academic sense, it's personal and social factors that for students at age of 18, 19, 20, you know, really moving to university, different town or different city is very new experience. There are financial issues, friendship issues, culture and lifestyle that we have to think, well, how can we support students with this transition? Maybe in different geographic locations. Campus size is enormous. We have around 30,000 students at the university. Many students come from institutions considerably smaller than that. But also there are administrative processes, things like how does communication happen with students in universities, but also policies, procedures, and the responsibilities of the students to engage with those. Whereas before they may have been helped through that process in schools, there's actually more work that they need to take on themselves in these areas. And again, this is from quite a big transition and orientation programme, a big piece of work at the University of Melbourne. And again, I think there's some good things that we can learn from other colleagues within other countries on this. And there's really looking at perceptions of students at the transition to university, over sort of 15 years within Australian universities, identifies some of these risks of failure. So low achievement is one. Pressure from financial commitments, perceived lack of parental understanding. So I think, again, there's some work that we can do collaboratively with schools, colleges, FE, university, around parental understanding and social support. Preparation for university study. Well, what do we mean by that? How can we actually work across this interface to better prepare students for study? And excessive hours of paid work were also mentioned as well. And it cited things like at-risk students being less likely to study with others, working consistently, or actually enjoying the course as well. And I think enjoyment of a higher education study really is an important part of what we need to consider. And so there has been a lot of work at looking at this transition, but much of it takes place within higher education institutions when students get there. Are the things that we can potentially do in that period of time between school and university or while they're applying to university study? Again, these need to be collaborative, and I pose these purely as questions for hopefully discussion later on. And I put this final substantial quote here talking about strong partnerships between schools, communities and, in this case, higher education institutions, because I think this really does sort of validate why we are here today, is looking at this issue of partnership across the transition point. And really, there is a lot that we can do there to ensure that we prepare students better and ensure students have realistic expectations. My final comment is that we shouldn't forget that there is another transition that we need to consider, and that's the transition to the workplace. And that may be the transition from school directly to the workplace or via some other form of training. But equally, we in institutions need to ensure that we prepare students in the way that I think employers are expecting. That certainly the CBI survey that came out a week or so ago, that actually employers really cite that we should, you know, 81% believe graduates, we should be responsible for ensuring graduates have the necessary employability skills. I feel that actually we all continue to develop skills across our lifetime. So again, there's work that we can do with employers here. But actually, we're not talking about quantity of STEM graduates, I think, necessarily anymore. We're also talking about issues of the perceived quality. And I think we've got to work with employers to see what they mean by the quality or the issues that they have in recruiting. And again, just to emphasise the importance of employability skills within that. So two key transition points, into university and out of university. I think universities need to be involved in working with employers on the transition out, but there's a lot that we can do with school and FE to enhance skills and or enhance that student experience on the way in. Thank you.